If you think you're entitled and special, unless your last name really is spelled S-P-E-C, if you're not special, don't think you are. Don't think that your money is better. Don't think your property is better.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Terry Moore and his team have closed over 500 triple net and San Diego County apartment escrows. He's author of Building Legacy Wealth, How to Build Wealth and Lead a Life Worth Living, and he has 12 countywide awards for brokerage excellence from San Diego Association of Realtors. He's also been an adjunct faculty for National University's Real Estate MBA program, and some other things you might want to know about him is that he survived being a real estate developer and a syndicator. He's also owned a mom-and-pop hardware store, Handy Hardware, in Norman, Oklahoma. He's blessed to be married to his, what did he say, above his station to Sandy since 1977. And his greatest claim to fame is that he might be the slowest triathlete you know. He says he's the last to finish, but he lasts until the finish. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Pleasure's mine. I mean, you know, one of the things, and we kind of talked about this before we kicked this off, was, you know, how you're helping people transition from apartment complexes into triple net leases. I'd love to hear about that. But, you know, just briefly, if you can, before we get into the nitty gritty, can you tell us where you started, where you are now, and quickly how you got there?
Well, like Mark Twain, I started at an early age. Maybe that was Charles Dickens. My growing up years were Texas and Oklahoma. After an MBA, I ended up working with Bank of America, which was the world's biggest bank. I was such an arrogant fool. I thought I was God's gift to the world. The world quickly explained that to me. I didn't think you could get fired from a bank unless you were crooked or incompetent. I learned you could get fired for being a Class A rectum. And I've been trying to get over that ever since. In the process of growing up, I worked in a variety of different places, but eventually I figured out that what I was called to do, what I was made to do, was to help adults make wise choices about money. What you're paid to do is your vacation, your vocation. What you're made to do is your calling. Well, about 50 years old, I kind of figured out, here's my pattern. Here's what I've done that's worked. When I've added value to adults about choices that really last and choices about money, that's worked well. They've benefited, I've benefited. And it turned out that what was working well was I ended up, after a variety of other things, I was a shopping center developer for a little while. My grandfather was a retailer. My dad was a retailer. I was a retailer. My dad was a guy who could fix anything. I have 10 thumbs. It doesn't look like it, but I have 10 thumbs. I'm a guy that could break anything. But I stopped being a developer because on a developer, every deal, you bet your entire net worth. You sign a personal guarantee. Now, you might be good enough that you don't make mistakes. I figured out I should not be a commercial loan officer, because a 90% success rate was not good enough for Bank of America, particularly if you were a jerk once in a while, and I was. And betting my entire net worth, which may not have been big, but it was all I had, that was not good for my wife and me. So we stopped doing that, and I started selling used apartment buildings. And so 40 years ago, I was helping people try to build wealth. Part of what you accent is, in effect, you tell people, invest in the right places. You don't want people to be in communities that are shrinking. You want people to be in places that are growing. And by dumb luck, I want to tell you it was brilliance, but I've never lied to you before. By dumb luck, we happened to be in San Diego. In San Diego, drunken fools make money in real estate. And it's not because the sun shines brighter here. It's our government policies have been really good for Republican owners and kind of tough for Democratic tenants. We haven't built enough apartments. So I don't know how far you define the Southeast, but the city of Houston has 1/4 the population of the state of California. The city of Houston has built more apartments and condos in the last decade than the state of California. So 30 some years ago when I started, San Diego was building almost enough apartments for the people who didn't graduate from college. Now we're 100,000 rental units short. So there's 550,000 heads of households who work in San Diego County, and there's 450,000 places for them to rent. There's 100,000 condos and houses that are rented, and there's 350,000 apartments. So there's 100,000 people who live to the county to the north of us, county to the east of us, or they live south of the border, and they want to live in San Diego. There's just not enough space. So our problem is we don't have enough rentals because of government policy. Detroit, the problem is opposite. They're bulldozing buildings because they don't have enough people with jobs. Cleveland has shrunk. St. Louis has shrunk. Southeast and the West have grown. Right. Well, in San Diego, because it's a great market, those of us who happen to be here, it's kind of like we found an oil well in our backyard. We found a diamond mine. We didn't invent the diamonds. They just happened to be there. But 30 years ago, I was trying to help people become wealthy. If we stayed alive, we didn't get married three times, we didn't get to addictions, we became wealthy. So now I'm trying to help people sell their perfectly good apartment buildings if they don't want to, like talking about your mom earlier, if they don't want to do this when they're 107, if they want some of their life when they're 84, they can buy single tenant triple nets, get steady Eddie income. And even though they're patriots, they don't have to give a third of their profit to the government. And in California, we have substantial taxes. So it really is more than a third of your profit if you sell here. So we've helped people buy B and C buildings, clean them up, paint them up, fix them up, raise the rent. You know, and you've been an evangelist in helping people do that, because when you create extra value, it's the dimes are the dollars of income, the dimes are the cash flow, the dollars are the multiple. And we've helped people buy used buildings, improve them, sell them, rents and repeat, create value. I have one family that started out with two rental house, rental condo that they had before they got married. And now they have more than 90 units. One of my clients started out with 24 really ugly apartments. I've seen a lot. These were really ugly. These were plug ugly. These were homemade sin ugly apartments. And when they passed 25 years later, they owned $50 million worth of income property. It's been a nice ride.
I would say so. And I think that's really interesting how, you know, you have taken the same group of people who had one asset class that made sense for them at a certain stage. And then as time and life progressed, you said, there's probably a different asset class that you should be investing in. Because like you said, who wants to be 85 or 90 and have an apartment complex you're managing?
I want to be 85 or 90. I just don't want to manage it. Right. So part of what I've learned over the years was when I was a commercial loan officer, we had to pick things that the bank would be comfortable financing. Mm-hmm. Financing brothels, that didn't work. I had clients who might want to run brothels, but the bank wouldn't finance them. So part of what I've done is I've tried to figure out, so the investment that would be perfect for your mom would be wrong for you.
Sure.
Your mom's not wrong. You're not wrong. Different is not wrong. Different is just different. And what you could eat at 7 years old, give me all the sugar, give me all the fat. At 7 years old, you could do that for a little while. At 77 years old, that's a bad deal. So you need to be, when I got my CCIM, I was able to diagnose problems. I was able to prescribe for problems I wasn't able to diagnose before. And part of it was, what's the right answer for this person? I don't have to agree with my clients, but I need to understand them. And several of my clients come in saying, I want blah, blah, blah. And probably blah, blah, blah is not the right answer for them. So I built my book around one particular woman, and she said, you know, I think we want to buy in a certain place, and that what she wanted did not exist. But eventually I learned what she and her husband were looking for, and we bought them things in a different zip code. We bought them the best in what many people would consider a scary zip code, and they became financially independent. But if we had said at the beginning, you think you want X and Y is the answer, they would have thought it was crazy. But because we got to know each other and we got to trust each other, they were able to understand what they were looking for was interesting. It wouldn't do what they wanted. They picked where they wanted to go. I was the guide. I said, I know how to help you find butterflies. I know how to find elephants. You're describing you want elephants, and really for the experience you want, butterflies. So I'm a client-centered broker, and I try to pay attention to what people need. And if I'm good and or lucky, and I pay attention enough, or I ask enough questions to figure out what's the right answer. You know, when you go in for glasses, well, one of these days you'll get glasses. The doctor does this little thing and he says, which is better, A or B? Which is better, C or D? Which is better, E or F? And iteratively, you get the right answer. That's kind of our approach to service.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, one of the things, California gets a bad rap, you know, when it comes to real estate investing or cash flow real estate investing. And you're here telling me that the story is very different maybe on the street than the one we hear on my side of the country.
Well, it's government policies that created rental housing shortage. So in Jacksonville, in Atlanta, in Biloxi, in Birmingham, in Raleigh, there's cash flow. That's a good thing. So here's the brutal reality. Somebody contacted me this week. They got $1 million. I'm going to use a simplified example. And so I said, here's the deal. We'll buy you a $3 million property and you'll get 2 or 3% cash on cash return and you'll pay the loan down. And the loan pay down will be 3% or so of your equity, maybe 5%. But here's why people are buying here. In the last 30 years, San Diego County apartments have gone up 8% a year compounded. So when you buy your $3 million building, if it goes up 8%, that's $240,000. So that's a 24% return on equity. That's mafia money, and it's legal. This is like cocaine. Now, it may not happen next year. For 30 years, we haven't built as much as we need. And it might be that we'll triple the number of apartments. But I don't see much evidence of that. There's a lot of rhetoric at the state level, and we are building more. But there's a pretty good chance that we're going to fall behind at a slower pace. It might be that 12 months from now, we'll be 105,000 units behind what we need instead of 110,000. But I don't think we're going to build more. So you can go to 40 other states and you can get more cash flow. But is the equity growing at 24% in Tallahassee? Maybe. Is it growing at 24%? Is your equity growing at 24% in Charlotte? Maybe. Is it growing in an ugly suburb of San Diego? Yeah. So 15 years ago, I believed my press releases and I semi-retired and we invested in Jacksonville and Raleigh. I sold some apartments to a poor dumb sucker who had spent $6,000 a unit to clean them up, paint them up, fix them up. The statute of limitation had passed, so I can tell this story. Poor dumb sucker paid me $78,000 a unit. I moved to Raleigh. We moved our money to Raleigh and Jacksonville. We spent $2 million taking two buildings and making them the nicest they'd been in a decade. Summarize, at the end of a decade, I made $2 million. I lost $2 million. And I came back with some Marriott points and some frequent flyer miles with Delta. The guy who bought my apartments, his equity quintupled. So was he dumb? Well, I don't know whether he was dumb or not. The apartments were in worse shape, but because of the supply and the demand, the market forces made him much wealthier. Right. We renovated apartments. We improved apartments. We did wonderful things and we had learning experience and he was wealthier. So you're wise that you're getting people to invest in growing markets. And I frequently don't like California policies. California policies mean that we're exporting families from California to states like where you are. And grandma's here, instead of bicycling over to see their grandkids, they're flying out a week and they have five nights of sleepovers when they fly to your cities. And grandpa goes out every other year and he's missing his grandkids. But the people in a 6,000 population spot in South Carolina, grandpa and grandpa walk over two blocks to where the kids are. And if somebody needs to go to the doctor, you know, they've got built-in thing. They've got a different life there. But you don't get wealthy by owning apartments and doing a reasonable job. Here you get wealthy. You just have to fly to see your grandkids. California is different. It may or may not be better, but it's different.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And yeah, there's certainly, you know, certainly the markets here, you are having incredible growth. And I don't think you're saying that doesn't happen, but you're saying that you can take an average apartment or something that's not that great in San Diego and hit a home run. Whereas
essentially in San Diego, the average building is 1970s, has the original kitchen and bathroom. It doesn't make sense here to tear down something and rebuild it. In Dallas, all electric buildings, you bulldoze them, you build new. We've downzoned things 29 out of the last 30 times in our general plan. So even though our population has grown faster than the national average for more than a generation, once upon a time, you could tear down grandma's house and you could build 10 units. Then they changed it and you could build 9. Then you could build 8. Then you could build 7. Then you could build 5. Now, in the last 6 months, we've changed it. I got a listing last night. There's going to be a 2-unit building. It's going to get torn down and they're going to build 50 units there. That's remarkable. That's rare. but we're still probably not going to build enough apartments for what we need. But historically, because we haven't built enough, the rents have gone up. So in Houston, the rents are cheap, the apartments are cheap. In Southern California, not true. I mentioned some friends, they had 24 ugly apartments. They died with $50 million. We bought some stuff in the near side countryside. The intersection was two state highways, didn't touch an interstate. Our rents tripled in 20 years. Tripled. That's more than doubled. Tripled. And you know what? Our expenses didn't triple. It was like having legal cocaine. It was like having a cash machine in the basement. We weren't smarter than my cousins other places, but we just happened to be in a spot where instead of discovering oil in the backyard or gold mine, we happened to invest income property and the government made us wealthy. It's crazy, but this is politically incorrect. Democratic mayors, Democratic governors have got housing policies which make Republican owners wealthy and are tough for Democratic tenants. Houston, for example, has Republican mayors and Republican governors, and they have housing policies which are really good for Democratic renters and don't help the Republican owners that much. No, being in the right place is much better.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure.
I mean, I think I get it where you're saying.
So in California, so in Tulsa, you can buy pretty new apartments in a sensible part of town, $80,000 a unit. In one of San Diego's zip codes, you pay $80,000 a unit for permits, for pieces of paper, for permission, for water, for sewer, for traffic, for schools, for permission. $80,000 per unit. No sticks, no bricks, no carpenters, no architects. $80,000 for permission slips to build. And so guess what? It costs more. So in a zip code that many people, that makes the nightly news, I was looking at something last night and it's listed for 14 times the annual rent. It's advertised as being a 4% cap rate. And this is on the news when you see the shooting, when you see the fire, when you see the bad story about folly and stupidity. This is a zip code and it's selling for 14 times the annual rent. In the last place where you bought, what kind of zip code would you pay 14 times the annual rent? Is there any zip code that you've ever invested in that you pay 14 times the annual rent?
That's annual rent, not NOI.
But because we have such a rental housing shortage, it makes sense. It's a great place to be a landlord. It's a great place to cash the check. It's a tough place to write the checks. Now, we have the French Riviera climate. We've grown jobs faster than the national average for 30 years. Our recessions are milder than the state or the nation. So I grew up in a state that had three legs of its economy, cattle, oil, and I forgot what else. But in San Diego, we've got nine drivers of our engine. We've got biotech, we've got education, we've got tourism, we've got amazing land of agriculture. We have a lot of things here and our recessions are short and mild. So 10 or 15 years ago, a recession happened. It took Oklahoma as a state, a little over 3 million people, more than 5 years to get back the same number of jobs it had before the recession. It took San Diego about a year and a half to get back the same number of jobs. Our recession was trivial and many places suffered more. But because we have a diverse economy, we're safer. We're a low-risk escalator to wealth, not cash flow, wealth. By the way, you pay income tax on your rent. If you do the capital gains right, you may never pay the tax on that. You just get wealthier. It's a crazy place to invest, but we've helped a couple hundred people become millionaires and multimillionaires here. But it's not high cash flow
right
at first.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's fantastic. And I love the fact that you don't skirt around that. Like, it's just, hey, this is what it is. And this is how you play the game. And, you know, this is how you make money doing it. So,
yeah.
That's brilliant. One other question for you here before we jump, you know, into the final four. As you review your last how many ever years in real estate, you know, is there anything maybe that you would have done differently along your journey that would have helped you kind of expedite your progress?
Well, in one sense, I took 3 years to answer that. I wrote a book based on dumb things that my clients and I had done, and the supply and demand being in the right market was an important piece of it. I have a chapter in there that talks about emotional intelligence. Don't be a jerk. So I wrote a blog last night, and there were 10 things in there, and 8 of them were stupid things that my clients or potential clients have done. If you try to treat people the way you want to be treated, and you think you're accountable to some higher power, you'll probably be a nicer person. You'll probably get along better. If you think you're entitled and special, unless your last name really is spelled S-P-E-C, if you're not special, don't think you are. Don't think that your money is better. Don't think your property is better. So emotional intelligence, being in the right market, those are two of the most important things. If you hire a broker or an attorney or a brain surgeon, if you think you're smarter than your expert, at least one of you is wasting your time. Fire that expert and get somebody that you think is better. And if you're smarter than your attorney or your broker or your brain surgeon, life is going to be really hard for you. If you don't think you can trust your brain surgeon, your doctor, your accountant, your broker, and they give you the best advice in the world, and you're too smart to take it, that's going to be a problem. I'm a man of faith. We talked about what we've done so far this morning. I'm a guy who reads scripture, and to me, Proverbs, I think, is inspired. I could be wrong, but in the book of Proverbs, I would summarize it as one of the key lessons is the fool scorns reproof. He won't take correction. The wise man says, truth is my friend. I may not like it, but I need counsel. And so emotional intelligence, being other-oriented, leaving enough money on the table so somebody wants to deal with you instead of you trying to take it all, those are simple lessons that not everybody gets.
Right, right. Man, that's great. That's great. Thanks for going deep on that. I love that, Terry. Let's jump here into the final four questions. First question is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
A lot of people would buy real estate investment trust stock, and that's not a bad deal. And if they're plugged in with somebody like you and they happen to get a developer, a syndicator who's good and or lucky, the returns will be much better. The scary part to me is 10 years ago, there weren't 4 people doing podcasts. And now let's just say that there's more than 20 who are saying, you ought to invest in Lake Charles. You ought to invest in Houston. You ought to invest in Boise. And some of you are going to be right. And some of you are going to get blindsided. Real estate investment trust is low risk, but that's not a bad thing because the initial investor isn't going to know that you're great and that the other show that's happening at the same time is pure schlock.
Right. Understood. Understood. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Being in the wrong market. So if the city that's closest to you or you're thinking of, if the population hasn't grown at least the national average in the last decade, in the last 20 years, you probably shouldn't be there. If it's growing at the national average or greater, you're probably okay. So I know 100 people who became wealthy in California and they moved their equity to the other side of Mississippi. And the problem was not that they picked bad towns, but generally speaking, they didn't do good due diligence or they didn't have good property management. By the time they figured it out, they were in trouble. And if you're kind of hands-on, or if you have somebody, a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, somebody you trust, your best friend since college, who can look after it, that can be okay. But if you're in the wrong market, the great deal in a bum market is not too good.
Right.
So if you had the best apartment building in Moscow or in China, if you had a beat-up dump in San Diego, it makes a difference where you are.
Yeah, I love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Part of my legacy is there's 100,000 people live in better housing because my clients have bought used buildings, the Nickerson idea, the dog in the block, buy a building with the right things wrong with it, clean up, paint up, fix it up. In our market, there's such a screaming shortage for rental housing. Value add makes sense. It doesn't make sense in lots of places. So the company that I was involved with before, who moved more than 1,000 investors out of California into other places, they tried the value add philosophy. And if you could build new for about the same price, the value add didn't have any special deal. Value add is really good when there's supply constraints. In ordinary market in most states, I'm not convinced that value add is that much better. It might be. But in some of the markets that I thought about going back to, the people that I trusted there said you could buy something after they've added value for about the same price as you can try to do it from 3,000 miles away. And they've gotten the good plumbers. They've learned which electricians to avoid, and you wouldn't necessarily know it.
That's fantastic. Last question for you. If listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that? And then how do they find out more about your book?
SanDiegoApartmentBroker.com. SanDiegoApartmentBroker.com. So Amazon has the book. Jeff Bezos will be glad to make twice as much money on the book as I will. It had more than 20 endorsements. One of my coaches said this is like a lifetime achievement award because of who's endorsed the book. And it really does try to tell the things which I've learned the hard way, I would like for other people to learn the easy way. Thank you for letting me be here. I hope we've added value to the people listening in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just so we have this on the audio for the folks who are listening just on the podcast side of this, can you tell us the name of that book again?
Sure. It's Building Legacy Wealth and How to Lead a Life Worth Imitating. I should also give my email, which is T as in trust, M as in Mike, O-O-R-E 1031 at Gmail, tmore1031@gmail.com.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Terry, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Enjoy. Be blessed. Be a blessing.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.